The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of Valerie, her guests, and callers. Now here's your host, Valerie Kirkgaard.
I am here, and I'm totally glad to be here, and you are listening to Waking Up in America Dynamic Radio Dialogues on Issues That Matter. Hey, I love the way the station disclaims us. It's perfect, because this way we get to really say what's in our hearts and on our minds. In our 22nd year of radio, we're actually inviting people to help us out. So if you want to hear Waking Up in America in your community, let us know about stations, newspapers, things of that nature that we can connect with so that we can spread the word and have it show up in your neighborhood. Actually, anybody on the entire planet that has a computer and access to the internet can actually tune in to our website at wakingupinamerica.com and just click on Tune In Here. Now, we're going to be talking about bringing justice back to the Justice Department today, and I've got two hot guests, David Swanson and Brad Friedman, and between the three of us, you may get your eyes open about a few things. At least we certainly hope you do. You want to ask us a question while we're on the air? You just simply send an email to Val, that's V-A-L, at wakingupinamerica.com, and we'll ask your question on the air. Odds are we will. Now, to get this program started off, one of the things I like to do is remember what our forefathers said to us, and because we have drifted so much in the past 8 years from what we were originally up to, that I think it's time to remind myself and to remind each of you that we have a United States flag, but the only time you hear this is at baseball games. So I'm going to ask you to pledge allegiance. So if you put your hand over your heart, and here are the words, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, the justice part of it. I'm Dr. Val Kirkgaard, and in 1984 I carried the Olympic torch. And once you have carried that torch, nothing ever remains the same. Sidius Altius Fortius, swifter, higher, stronger, are the words written on the torch. And we've been pretty low down in the pit for the last 8 years, and it's time for us to lift ourselves back up again, to take lessons from what's happened, and to create new possibilities for ourselves as far as what we want. And we can make the old system even stronger, but we're going to have to stand for that. And when I say stand for it, we're going to have to unite in voice. There's actually a word that I always thought was misused. The word is conspiracy. And I don't know if you know this or not, but the word conspiracy actually means to breathe together. So, in a sense, conspiracy has always been touted as a bad thing. And the fact is that once we all breathe together, we can restore the justice and liberty that we had and cherished so much and lost so much of. It wasn't just the last 8 years. This process has been a slow erosion. Started at Jekyll Island as far as the U.S. is concerned, probably, as the bankers got together in 1913, I think it was, to actually create the Federal Reserve Bank. But that's another radio program. We'll be having Ellen Brown on later again this month to talk more about the web of debt. So our guests reflect the values of what it is that we're up to here with Higher, Swifter, and Stronger, and they're experts from all different kinds of fields. And Brad Friedman, you do Brad's blog. And if you would let our listeners know what you intended when you started that and what's happened for you as you, how many years have you been doing that now? Are you there? David, are you there?
I am.
I wonder where Brad went.
I couldn't begin to tell you.
He totally was here, so he should show up again, too. Maybe he got bounced off the bridge as well. So, David, I don't know if you know anything about Brad's blog or not, do you?
Brad is an absolutely wonderful guy who I've known since well known, well, I'd say, since 2004, who is perhaps the leading citizen activist, researcher, blogger on violations of our voting rights and schemes and scams to make our elections unreliable, if not steal them. There was a beep. Could that have been Brad?
I'm wondering.
Brad, I'm going to keep talking about
you. Keep talking, and I'm going to go look for him again, okay?
Absolutely. Yeah, bradblog.com is a blog that is a model for blogs on any issue, because Brad has taken the issue of election fraud, not voter fraud, but election fraud, dangers to our system of voting, and with incredible diligence and perseverance and insight and focus on that one issue, has single-handedly created coalition efforts and exposed stories and made the issue matter in local and state and federal government. He's done an absolutely tremendous job. And I could not more strongly recommend that you go to bradblog.com and read what he's working on. And the latest thing that I think we were planning to talk about is a campaign that you can find at velvetrevolution.us, a campaign that Brad is a part of and a spokesman for, to bring justice to the Justice Department, restore justice to justice. And the idea being that there are objections now and reversals and cases being thrown out because of misconduct of prosecutors during the Bush-Cheney years. And yet, some of the most egregious examples of misconduct by prosecutors are untouched, and there's no sign of life that they are even being considered. And these are numerous cases, most prominently those of Don Siegelman in Alabama and Paul Miner in Mississippi, of politically motivated prosecutions. So we already know by the Justice Department's own admissions that they were hiring and firing for political purposes. They were also prosecuting people for political purposes.
I have located him, and he will be here.
Good, good. Well, you can tell him I already explained.
I know, it's pretty good.
Who he is and what he's working on, but I may have screwed it all up. So.
Yeah, well, I doubt that. You guys have been working really hard. Now, you say that you were aware of Brad since 2004, and we'll find out when he gets on how long.
Probably before that, but that's just when I remember working together with many other people on exposing the problems with the election, especially in Ohio.
Oh, yeah, wasn't that a trip? I think I heard him. Did I hear Brad?
I am here.
Hey there.
Hi, guys. Sorry about that.
No, it's no problema.
A good facsimile.
Actually, your ears should be burning, because this gentleman here David has been saying very nice things about you.
Oh, well, he's very kind to do that. I appreciate that. David, how are you, sir?
I'm wonderful. How about you?
I'm doing okay. Hanging in there.
So one of the things that we were talking about was that I guess David first became aware of you in 2004. How long have you actually been doing your blog?
Started in January of 2004, and pleased to have gotten to know David during that period and worked with him, consider him a colleague and a friend over the years, as many of the various campaigns that both he and I have worked on have crossed over from time to time.
So what actually motivated you to do your blog? What was the final thing you said, I just can't keep quiet about this anymore, this is it?
Well, when I started the blog, I really never had any intention of doing what it is that I've ended up doing. And I started it rather as a lark. I had just finished up a long project, a five-year project, something completely unrelated, but had gotten used to sort of writing every day. And my girlfriend mentioned to me, well, why don't you start a blog? That would be busy. And I said, well, what the hell is a blog? And she explained it, and I went ahead and set one up and was, sort of posting pictures of my cats and other silly things.
Is this Desi who you're talking about?
That is Desi, yeah.
Yeah, great. I thought we'd give her a little credit here.
I appreciate that. She's now my co-host on the Green News Report.
And where is that? Where can that be found?
That can be found on stations across the country, and you can download the listen online or download the podcast at greennews.com www.bradblog.com. But, you know, along the way, after I had started the, you know, sort of a blog just for my own personal use, I began seeing things out there that were not being adequately covered, frankly covered at all, by the corporate mainstream media, and that needed some investigation and some coverage. And where I used to call myself an investigative blogger out of respect to journalists who actually went to, you know, J school and stuff like that, eventually I said, well, the hell with that, because I saw what it was these so-called journalists were doing, and I have since described myself as an investigative journalist, period, and it makes no difference whether I'm writing on the blog or freelancing elsewhere. Somebody needs to do the job that the mainstream corporate media used to do, and unfortunately, that's fallen to private citizens like myself and David and so forth.
So, David.
Yeah.
Now, your website is afterdowningstreet.org. When did you put that up, and what moved you into that arena?
Well, I've got lots of websites. Brad is much more focused and disciplined, but I think After Downing Street happened about exactly 4 years ago when there were some strong pieces of evidence becoming public that came to be called the Downing Street Minutes and the Downing Street Memos, that we were lied into a war of aggression against Iraq, that in the summer of 2002 when these memos were drafted and recorded.
Is there a dishwasher going on in somebody's background?
Not in my house, certainly. I wish there were.
It sure sounds like it.
I hear that.
So, dear listeners, this is the dishwasher that we're using as background music to say that we are actually working on cleaning up the United States of America. And this is here.
I don't hear the dishwasher, but I admit that I am outside. It was the quietest place that I could find right
okay,
now.
Okay, got it.
On the road,
so maybe it's
the
sprinkler. Anyway, we're cleaning stuff up, and we want you to know that. And what I normally say in the front part of this program, and I'm not sure that I did, is we call in from our homes and offices all over the place to make this program happen. So sometimes you will actually hear things that are just part of the environment. So you're absolutely guaranteed that this show has not been dummied with, and it's totally real, okay? So with that.
I think it's the winds of change blowing
through. There you go. I like the dishwasher analogy, the cleaning, but the winds of change totally work for me as well.
Smartly done, David. I remember when we were broadcasting live from Crawford, Texas. And,
did you really?
yeah. And during Cindy Sheehan's stand, and the train, there was a train literally that would come barreling through town while we were on air, and every time it came through, we just played the song Peace Train. Stevens and said, "That's
is
a
that
train
Nelson
rolling
song?
Through." Is that
Willie Nelson's song?
Cat Stevens.
Cat Stevens' song.
Yeah.
That was a good effort, and that was the summer following the spring that the Downing Street Minutes had come out, and we were pushing for peace and impeachment and demanding answers from these people, and this was before the Democrats had any power, and so they were all on our side, and our agenda lined up with theirs, and we were moving toward impeachment and accountability and cutting off the funds and ending the war, and that all gradually changed over the years, even as more and more pieces of evidence of every crime piled up. You know, we now, with Senator Spector having given the Democrats 60 votes in the Senate, which they seem to be furious with him over, he has stripped them of their very last excuse. They now have complete power. They have, at least theoretically, if they can discipline it, the power to break through you know, filibusters used now in the Senate at the drop of a hat, and they have the House, a huge majority, and they have the White House, and so the question is now, what can we do? And with more and more evidence and more people in power willing to take these things on, there is increasing talk about prosecutions and impeachments, although it's almost entirely limited to torture, which is fine as long as it opens the door to all the other crimes.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw something in here. There actually is one Republican that I think actually says some really intelligent things occasionally, and that's Ron Paul. Do you agree or disagree?
Oh, there are lots of them who say intelligent things once in a while. that's true for the Democrats, too.
Well, you know, I'll give Ron Paul the credit for speaking up when it was certainly not popular to do so as a Republican. It still isn't, but you know, he was certainly quite loud, and you know, said at least a lot of the right things and stood up for freedom back when it was incredibly unpopular. So did Chuck Hagel, and you know, so did some of the others. But well, I'll leave it at that for the moment.
Yeah, I think that's probably smart. Before we go into the main topic, I'm just really curious. Were you guys like independently wealthy, or do people sponsor you, or how on earth do you manage to put all the time and energy that you do into this? David, you get to go first.
I get paid by organizations I work for. I get paid by Democrats.com. I do work for all kinds of peace groups and activist groups, I make websites for people, and now I write books. Go to After Downing Street or go to davidswanson.org and buy my book. And
the name of it is?
I'll keep working. The name of it is Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency and Forming a More Perfect Union.
Wow, that's a mouthful and a good one, too. So, Mr. Brad, what about you?
No, I wish I was independently wealthy. I do a lot of begging and groveling and pleading for folks to support my work both at bradblog.com and at velvetrevolution.us, where we put, you know, really just something that we are able to raise into our campaigns and into funding other folks' campaigns and supporting, you know, the good work. As a matter of fact, I think we help fund or in other ways some set up afterdowningstreet.org, as I recall.
After Downing Street, the website, is hosted through the generosity of velvetrevolution.us.
How about that?
It's really just a matter of, you know, begging and pleading and realizing that, you know, there are certain things that I can do that really don't seem to be done by anybody else, so I realize that it needs
like
to be done.
Could you be specific about that?
What's that?
You're saying that there are things that you can do that you don't see others doing. What do you see as your specific contribution?
Well, you know, I think I heard you guys as I was coming on discussing the, I think David was mentioning the 2004 election. Certainly my coverage of issues of election integrity, many, many stories that I've broken, just simply, it seems to me, would not be out there at all, moving the ball forward in regards to concerns about our election system and so forth, you know, had I not been there to do the digging and to get it out. In other cases, it's a matter of taking stories that are out there and hopefully putting them into a proper perspective that, you know, often the media simply fail to do, you know, and they come out with their fair and balanced nonsense. You know,
right.
Fairness is one thing, balance is another. And you know, if it's sunny out, there's no reason to say, you know, yet critics say it's raining when we can all look out the window and see that it is sunny. And so when I see these reports where you know, one side said it's sunny, on the other hand, the other side says it's raining, you know, I want to cry foul and say, you know, this is complete and utter nonsense. Everybody knows it is sunny, and those who are saying it is raining are simply liars. And
here
is the evidence.
So you brought something up, okay, in this conversation, and I have to throw this in because this swine flu thing is just really upsetting me. I would actually say, I actually can say on the internet certain words, but since I know this is being planned on certain land stations, the media spin on N1H1. And the 300,000 pigs killed in Egypt, and the Chinese pulling back the ordering of pork when pork pigs don't even cause this flu, and it's being called a pandemic, which everybody accepts as like some kind of massive epidemic because they don't translate it to just mean that there are global breakouts. Isn't this really a current spin on how, you know, media's power in distorting things? I mean, if we could take this swine flu thing and apply it to the presidency and to the you know, our legal systems.
Well, on our Green News report, we called it a global panic-demic, which is more, I think, more apropos. And but it also underscores, you know, it's not unusual. It is the story of the week, the story of the day. It seems that cable news and the newspapers and even the blogosphere now, to a great extent, simply love this pack journalist thing, and whatever the topic of the day is, they must follow, they must repeat endlessly 24/7.
And they must distort it.
Until they move on to something else, they must distort it as they see fit, and then move on to, you know, the next panic-demic. All that keeps us from dealing with the very real issues that I know that folks like David and myself try to break through the noise with every day to try to get folks to focus on what actually matters to the citizens of this nation and this world.
One of the reasons I brought this up, and David, please comment, I brought it up because though I think some people don't want to think politics and such, they will go crazy over something like the swine flu conversation. And
yes.
I think it's really a vivid contrast to what's going on with the Justice Department, which we'll be talking about soon. But I think this is something that everybody's ignoring to and feeling frightened about.
The corporate media, the old-fashioned media that's on the way out to be replaced by the Brad Friedmans of the world, operates out of laziness and lack of resources and out of a desire for ratings and entertainment value. And so they pick these kind of stories and they push them and they create panics with them and they hype them. And they do the sort of reporting that Brad describes of he said and she said because it's easy for them and it doesn't displease anyone and they maintain this facade of pseudo-fairness. But they also decide what stories to cover and what stories to completely ignore. And the stories that they do cover, they do it very shoddily with this attitude of we are observers who must simply observe as spectators and report on what's happened and predict the future or record the past. And if somebody says something certain and they're powerful, then it's certain, rather than the sort of reporting that someone in touch with activism would do. So newspapers all over the country today, front page, AP stories and other wire services stories saying there will be no prosecutions of the torture lawyers. Why? Because someone has leaked word that an internal report in the Justice Department is not going to recommend prosecutions of the torture lawyers. Well, fine. Does that surprise anybody? But the law requires it, and it will happen if there is sufficient pressure to force it to happen. And that has not changed one bit from yesterday to today. And yet you have this story decreeing for the citizens of a democratic republic who are supposed to be active participants in their own governance that the law will not be enforced, period, because somebody leaked a story. This is the sort of reporting that's just not done by responsible blogs and websites.
So what kind
and
of...
I'll add to what David Dell actually... I'd like to concur with what David said, with one exception, which I think, David, you mentioned, a lack of resources. Frankly, if you or I had a tenth of a percent of the resources that are available to our mainstream corporate media at this point, what we could do, I suspect, would change the world. I think, to a certain extent, we've been able to change the world in a small way with no resources, but to say that, to give them the out, the excuse, that it is lack of resources on their part instead of lack of imagination, lack of diligence, is something I just don't want to let go. There's plenty of resources. You know how many stories you've broken with no resources, how many stories I've broken with no resources.
Right.
It ain't lack of resources.
You're absolutely right, and I stand completely corrected.
Let me ask you a question about the fact that Barack Obama wanted to move forward and not really go into this. Do you think he can avoid it?
No.
Or do you think we should avoid it? Because I don't think so.
Well, I would love to see guilty murderers and rapists and thieves going before judges now and saying, the president would like you to move forward, Your Honor. This is a time for reflection, not retribution. Haven't you heard? Get with the program. Because
right.
That is what President Obama is advocating at a much higher level. There's a good story today on Daily Beast, to name another website, with yet another report on the dozens of murders, that is, torture resulting in death. So when we talk about torture, we should always talk about torture and murder so that people understand there are deaths involved. We are talking here about looking forward rather than prosecuting murderers, which, you know, would be somewhat closer to acceptable if you could somehow still manage to deter the torture and the murder, and yet they are ongoing. Torture is
so
ongoing.
You're saying it's just as bad as it was?
No, it's not just as bad as it was. It hasn't been as bad as it was since they managed to invade Iraq, which was what the intense torture of these key figures was all about, was getting them to agree to lies that would justify invading Iraq. And once that was done or failed in various cases, and the bombs had fallen and we were in Iraq, that largely stopped. And so Dick Cheney running around screaming that Obama's making us less safe because he's not doing enough torture. Well, he could have been saying that for the past few years, but on the level of the prisons and the military, torture was made routine, and thousands of people were tortured, and it's ongoing in Guantanamo and elsewhere and in Iraq, and torture by our puppet government in Iraq is extensive. And this is all happening because President Obama has decided it's a policy difference, it's not a crime. And so it's on the level of policy, he's pronouncing the right one, although Bush said it too, we do not torture. But it's not a policy, it's a crime, and the law requires the enforcement of laws, even against powerful people, or you guarantee the continuation and repetition of
crime. So what do you think is, how does he justify this position?
Well, legally, he can't. Legally, there is no justification. We have to enforce the laws, and we are party to treaties that require the prosecution of any act complicit in torture, much less murder. There is no legal justification. Politically, he says, you know, I want to be about reconciliation. And, you know, this is the other thing the media that comes out of D.C. does, is it tells people around the country, your top priority should be that everybody on Capitol Hill get along with each other. And if one gang of them wants to go slaughter a million people, our top priority out of gentleness and peace should be that the other gang get along with them. So there's peace and harmony and bipartisanship in Washington, as if that's the top priority.
And we actually need to take a break here, and we'll be right back. We're on the air with David Swanson and Brad Friedman. We'll be right back after this break. We're going to be talking about restoring justice at the Justice Department, and you were already listening to the conversation, so we'll be right back.
We live in a world that is more alive with possibility than ever before in history. Yet it is easy to get lost in the confusion and chaos of such an accelerated world. How do we stay connected and aligned with the unlimited potential that lies within us and soar in these exciting yet challenging times? Diamond Alignment, a sacred technology for the 21st century, offers high-speed connection and alignment with this divine power within, both convenient and profound. The 6-minute multi-sensory diamond experience delivered via the internet clears your mind, relaxes your body, and creates inner peace no matter what is going on around you. The Diamond Alignment experience effortlessly keeps you charged with joy and equanimity and greater focus and clarity throughout your day. When you experience the expansive energy of Diamond Alignment, activate the unlimited wealth and potential within you.
Hey, there you go. Diamond Alignment, very special stuff. It's a friend of mine, Joy, actually created this sound. It's actually, she calls it a transmission, and it's a divine transmission, and if you listen to the tapes of Waking Up in America, she's been a sponsor of the show, Diamond Alignment, for over a year now, you will actually hear a difference in the tones of the voices after this brief thing. Check it out at diamondalignment.com and find out more about it, because this is a tone that you can play for yourself daily, and it really removes tremendous amounts of stress from your life. We also want to acknowledge the good guys that help make Waking Up in America possible. And one of them is StarDove's and the StarDove mailing list. And this mailing list is to about 100,000 really high-quality, quite active, very powerful people. And you can get that list at a very reasonable price. And if you tell Ra, who manages this list, that Waking Up in America sent you, you'll actually get a discount. And you can reach him by calling 828-665-0411. That's 828-665-0411. Now, if you just need a break from all of this energy and these conversations and the ups and downs of being in the United States at this time, honest to gosh, the swine flu is not going from pigs to people. Mexico is not a dangerous place. The influenza actually takes more lives by about 100 times than anything else that's happening on this planet. 35,000 people a year, I guess, actually die of influenza. So if you're afraid of Mexico, don't be, because down there is waiting this beautiful little town of San Pancho, just 45 minutes north of Puerto Vallarta. And Steve and Diana have bungalows there. I'm actually booked to go there in a couple of weeks, and I'm totally looking forward to it. It's a charming place, 2 blocks from the beach. Prices, by the way, the peso is now 15 pesos to the dollar. So your dollar is actually stronger in Mexico than probably any other place in the world at this time. So take your dollars down to Mexico, and if you like beer and guacamole, they got that. If you're an iced tea person, they got that. If you like beautiful sunsets and being laid back and taking horseback rides and playing golf, San Pancho and Roberto's bungalows are the place. So once again, you tell Steve and Diana that you got it from Waking Up in America, and you get the discount, 971-239-4120. That's 971-239-4120. So there you go. Now, I can't tell you. Brad Friedman and David Swanson, I'm not going to say that I emulate you totally. You're figures that inspire me. Brad, what is it you say on your home answering machine? When a person calls, it says something like, Beans, that you were smart, or how smart of you, or something.
Yes, nicely done.
Nicely done. Like nicely done. I've told so many people about that. So you get these strange calls at your house. It's probably people calling up to hear, nicely done. You have a way with words.
Well, thank you.
You have passion.
Much.
You have a heart. David Swanson, every time you've been on the show, you've always made sure that the person you were on the show with looks fabulous. And that's the thing I've seen you do every time that you've been here. That's a gift that you have. It's a point of view that you are. So you guys are two of the guys that I trust most on the planet for what comes out of your mouth, because I like where you come from, how you say it, and what you're up to. I asked about your funding earlier because I hoped that some of our listeners would get an idea. Maybe, you know, some corporation that actually, you know, not all corporate presidents are stealing. I just want to make that point very clear. So there was a website you talked about, which was Restore Justice at Justice. There was also, you had talked about too, David, which was Impeach EB. Impeach Bybee.
You did mention After Downing Street, but there is also now impeachbybee.org and prosecutebushcheney.org, and all of those will get you to the same place where your contributions would be, of course, greatly appreciated and used. Bybee is the last name of a guy with a lifetime appointment as a federal judge in the Ninth Circuit on the west coast of the United States. Who worked in Bush's Justice Department, who was the head of the Office of Legal Counsel, who was the boss of a guy who's somewhat better known named John Yoo, and whose name is on most of these memos authorizing torture and illegal wars and all variety of crimes simply by a president asserting the imperial power of an emperor. And he, you know, the New York Times wants him impeached. All the mainstream powerful groups and activists want him impeached, who would never come around for impeaching Bush and Cheney. His impeachment and a trial in the Senate would open the door to all of the crimes of the past 8 years. And there is the possibility of making it happen. So people should go to impeach Bybee. That's B-Y-B-E-E, impeachbybee.org.
Now, Brad,
yeah.
Are you related to the Restore Justice at Justice.com?
I am. That is a campaign that's launched by my group, VelvetRevolution.us. And I want to, and actually I want to talk about Restore Justice at Justice.com in a second, but there was two points that I wanted to make. One, before we finish up today, David Swanson himself was involved in one of the most, for me, one of the most hopeful moments, at least I'll take it as such, in this entire torture affair just a few days ago, between an incident between him and Eric Holder. I want to talk about that, but just to follow up on something mentioned prior to the break, if I could, very quickly.
Oh, please.
Which is to say, one, of course, I'm delighted with President Obama's new policy of looking forward instead of back. As it turns out, I robbed a bank yesterday, and I guess I'm going to be off the hook since that took place yesterday. So I applaud his new policy.
So that's how you're actually funding the blog, right?
That's right. That's exactly it. And there is no looking back, so there you go. But the other point was, and it ties into this impeaching Bybee and so forth, a fellow who I work with now who's been guest blogging at bradblog.com, an attorney out here in California, his father was waterboarded in World War II by the Japanese.
And that guy was actually executed, wasn't he? The guy that waterboarded?
I'm not sure if he was the one who was executed. I know that his father, Ernest Canning is his name, his father testified after the war against these folks. Some of them were, in fact, executed. I know many of them were jailed.
I do know one guy was executed, Japanese was executed for waterboarding.
Well, I certainly know that Ernie has a stake, if you will, in this fight and in the idea of our country torturing. And later this afternoon, he'll be launching a four-part series about the history of CIA torture, how we have gotten to where we are today. And, you know, this frankly kicked off long ago, long before 9/11. And the CIA has a rather rich history of about 50 years involving torture. Ernie will be covering that, as I say, in a four-part series starting today at bradblog.com, which really, I think, puts into perspective how we got to where we are now and how it is that if we don't bring accountability for where we have gotten to now, this will simply continue. You know, things have died off, depending on who the president is. Things have, you know, cooled down
right
at various times. But once the bad guys, if you will, get back into power again, sure enough, these policies, these crimes of torture will continue. So he's really done a detailed report looking at the 50-year history of the of torture by the CIA in this country, and how it ties in, and how really what has happened, guys like Jay Bybee and John Yoo, and Dick Cheney, Don Rumsfeld, and George W. Bush, have really just been continuing a policy, coming out with new, quote-unquote, legal opinions to justify what it is that they have been doing. So I hope you'll look for that report at bradblog.com. It's quite an interesting one. In addition to it, when it comes to accountability.
Brad, just an interjective moment here.
Yeah.
50 years ago, what kind of torture was the CIA doing?
Well, I'm going to defer to Ernie on this, but they had put together a torture manual, if you will, that describes all of the policies all the practices that were put into policy by the Bush administration, the idea of how torture works, how you can folks against themselves. They put together what's been called as the Kubark Manual that actually describes all of these policies and how they come to be developed and how they had been used at various times throughout our nation's history.
So, David, do you know anything about this?
Yeah, I've been reading actually quite a bit about the history of torture by our country and around the world, and it's incredibly ugly.
Well, you know, I was thinking, I read a book on the Masons, and when they picked up all the Masons back in the 1500s or 1600s, those torture machines were something else. I mean, they would, like, dislocate people's shoulders and stretching machines and all that. So
you
certainly waterboarding is different than that. I mean,
well,
you know.
Remember, all of the torture policies that we put into place were, by and large, backwards engineered from our own military training, you know, to our troops in how to withstand these practices, how to withstand torture. We went to the academy where they, you know, taught our troops how to withstand this torture and said, okay, what are you teaching them how to withstand, and how can we actually do that? Not the withstanding part, but the torture part. And so they really backwards engineered from our own military how to pull off these various practices that they were, you know, warning our troops, you could face these terrible practices someday that are in violation of the Geneva Convention, and oh, now we are going to do them ourselves.
So did they actually waterboard all the guys to show them what it felt like?
I don't know if they waterboarded all of them, but yeah, they actually did waterboard a lot of people in hopes of...
Through SEER training, yes, were waterboarded.
Yeah.
And,
so I bet they didn't know, I bet the men and women of the military did not know they were going to be trained in by being waterboarded when they signed up.
But the thing is, they can't be waterboarded, because when it's training and you're told that you're not going to die, it's a very, very different experience from being waterboarded by someone who's threatening to actually drown you to the point of death. Is a very, very different thing. And so the simulations are never quite the reality. But, you know, the motivations for this torture are similar to the motivations for torture back through decades and millennia. And one of the chief motivations was to get confessions to false statements, to get support for invading Iraq. And the other was to create this image of the torture victims for us as beasts, as subhuman creatures you cannot talk to, you can only communicate with them through force. And that was done very, very effectively. I mean, you go back to ancient Greece, where it was understood that a free person, an intelligent, educated person, you couldn't torture them and get a confession because they might lie, but slaves were too stupid to lie. So you could torture a slave, and his or her confession, that was the best evidence in
the
trial.
That's disgusting.
Right. And so this is the thinking, is that you wouldn't torture, you know, you wouldn't torture a white person, an educated person, a Christian, an American, you know, those can't be terrorists. You know,
well, you know, the Bush administration sure brought a lot of God into this conversation. Do you think that allowed them to get away with?
Well, it's a very interesting poll that's been interpreted a number of ways this past week by Pew, that found that in America, the more religious you are, the more you support torture. And, you know, some have even interpreted that as, you know, self-sacrificing torture. Jesus was tortured, so torture must be good. I interpret it much more as Christian willingness to torture Muslims. Because the people being tortured are universally understood to be Muslims, and the more you are a Christian in the United States, and certain branches of Christianity in the United States, the more that is acceptable. And I think that's repulsive and needs to be addressed.
Well, one of the guys on the show, I can't honestly remember which one it was, but I do remember the comment. He said, you know, if Jesus was born today, we wouldn't be looking at Jesus on a cross. We'd have Jesus around our neck in a little electric chair.
Yeah, he would be one of those wacko far-left code pink folks.
There you go.
That would be thrown out of Congress.
This is for you, Jody Evans.
There you go.
We thank you, Jody Evans.
Remember, the torture is not good for getting information. Torture is good for getting people to say what it is that the torturers want them to say. It's
yeah.
False confessions. And, you know, Ernie Canning, I had mentioned his father, when he was waterboarded by the Japanese, first off, he couldn't understand what they were saying, so he thought that he was signing his own death warrant when he was waterboarded. In fact, what he was signing was a confession that he was a British agent, which he wasn't, but they were able to get him to do that. Now, they were so worried about his shaky handwriting in his signature that they tortured him a little bit more later on to get him to sign another document saying that he signed the first one on his own free will and that he wasn't tortured. So that's how this crap works. You know, it is not about information. And that's what our own government was doing in our own name. And when we hear folks, whether it's Obama or anybody else, say that these people will not be prosecuted for these most appalling, Ronald Reagan, I believe, called it abhorrent crime, then, you know, frankly, it turns my stomach, and I suspect neither David nor myself are going to rest until there is some form of accountability.
No, that's true. Actually, Ed Asner, do you guys know Ed Asner?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, so he's been great on the show, and he's just a really good friend. And also, this year I went to Washington, D.C. for the inauguration, and it was probably the most remarkable 3 days of my life, based on the hope and the generosity and the kindness and the relatedness and the no barriers between the 2.2 million people that were there. It was a very, very, very moving experience. It was life without – it was people were in love with each other because they had pulled off the big one.
But you know what? Hope is – hope should be an inspiration to action, not an inspiration to take a rest.
And what I was going to say was that I was totally involved in this, David, until he came out with this conversation about how we're just going to move forward. And we're not going to look at all of this stuff. And I said, what? It's like the bubble – I'm not going to say the bubble popped. I actually have a cartoon that's going on the website where Obama is walking with his water dog. Have you seen this cartoon?
Yeah, walking on water.
Yeah, he's walking on the water and the dog's swimming next to him. It's the dog's first walk with the president. It was the first time that I actually heard something I just really didn't like.
Well, people are going to treat a president like he walks on water, and then they're going to find out he doesn't and treat him like the devil, and both are absurd. You know, in a democratic republic, the ideal time for the maximum pressure for dumping all our resources and efforts and energy into pushing our representatives and our president to do the right thing is when we've got the best people we could elected. You know, waiting until things are absolutely hopeless and we've got a real fascist in there to fund all the peace and justice efforts is what we do, but it's backwards. It just builds frustration. When you've elected somebody who's a little bit better, that's the time not to be defunding all the peace groups, which is what is happening. We've got it upside down.
Now, who's defunding the groups?
Wealthy people with a very limited understanding of how you affect change in a democratic society.
So are they aligning? Let me back up on that for a moment. Okay, I've heard lately that the president is wavering on his position to go forward and to not look at this. Have you noticed this? Is any of this true? Do you think that that he's being affected?
There is huge pressure building and building from the grassroots and the powerful elites, and it will be very hard to resist. And prosecutions are entirely possible, and I encourage everyone to go to prosecutebushcheney.org and do everything there you can to make it happen. The best thing that Obama said was that in terms of prosecuting the CIA employees who tortured, it would not happen. Period, because he's the emperor and he said so, even though the law requires it. But in terms of prosecuting the lawyers in the Justice Department who wrote the memos authorizing the torture, he would leave that up to the Attorney General, because it's up to the Attorney General to decide who to prosecute or not, which is true. It is up to the Attorney General, and the Attorney General's duty is to the law, and the law is very clear. But this was a mixed message, because, you know, I'm going to let the Attorney General decide for certain people. For other people, I'm just going to say, no, you can't touch
it. So, Brad, what kind of marks are you going to give Attorney General Holder, Brad?
Well, I'm going to give him no marks at this time, because his job has just begun, and you know, he hasn't really done much of anything yet. And there are certain things that I'm quite concerned about, and I'll mention one of them in regards to our Restore Justice at Justice.com campaign, which is, you know, we are calling on Attorney General Eric Holder to begin an investigation into the political prosecutions. This moves away a little bit from the torture, more to the, you know, domestic issues, political prosecutions that took place over the last 8 years of folks like Governor Don Siegelman, the Democrat from Alabama, Paul Miner, the Democrat from Mississippi, and, frankly, untold numbers of others who were targeted illegally for political prosecution by the Bush Justice Department, which for the first time in our nation really used that DOJ for little more than a political bludgeon. We're calling on Holder to go back to investigate all of those prosecutions, determine which ones were politically motivated, and if they were political prosecutions, they should be vacated. You know, he recently dropped the charges against the Republican Senator Ted Stevens up in Alaska because there were problems with the prosecution. Frankly, I applaud him for doing that. But when somebody recently asked him if he was investigating the Governor Don Siegelman case, he said there is currently no investigation into that, which was stunning to me. So that's what RestoreJustice at Justice.com is calling for, is demanding an investigation into all of these political prosecutions over the last 8 years, and where they are identified, they should be vacated, because political prosecutions are illegal. So I'm not going to give him high marks, Holder, high marks there yet by any
I just wondered if he'd made any good moves, in your opinion.
Well, this is what I wanted to. I had mentioned a bit of hopeful news from, I think it was a week or so ago, and at least I'm taking it as hopeful, and it was, it actually involved David Swanson and Eric Holder. And there was a hearing where Holder spoke last week in the House, and as usual, the good folks from Code Pink were there as silent protesters behind him. David Swanson was with them that day. There's a photo that I've got up on the blog from AP showing David right behind Holder holding up a pink torture is illegal sign.
Yeah, I saw that.
After the hearing, as David reported it, and he can give us more specifics, but as Holder was leaving the room and the protesters were doing their protest, David says that Holder turned to him and said directly to him, "And you, quote, and you will be proud of your country." And it's unclear, I think, what Holder meant by that. But I'm going to take that as a hopeful sign. It was said, you know, sort of quietly and privately, directly to David and the protesters there. And the idea that Holder is telling them, and he knows who they are, and he knows what it is they're protesting, that he turned directly to them and said, "You will be proud of your country." I am going to take that as a hopeful sign, maybe because I need to find some kind of hope here.
No,
but
I totally agree. A hopeful sign for me was actually the G20 conference when Barack Obama said, "We've come to listen." And I actually do think he's listening to us. And, David, you were there, so what's your comment?
I was where? I'm sorry?
You were at what Brad was just talking about.
Oh, I was in fact there. And when the hearings end and they turn off the mics, the room gets very silent, eerily silent. And so I simply spoke up and said, "Attorney General, we need a special prosecutor. We Americans like the rule of law for everybody." Those were roughly my words. And he said to me, and the whole room could hear both of these things, and there's probably video or audio somewhere. He said to me, "And you will be proud of," I had originally written down "country," but I think he may have said, "And you will be proud of your government," as someone else told me was what he actually said. Either way, the point was the same, that he understood clearly I wanted a special prosecutor, and he told me, "You will be proud of your government." Could be complete nonsense, but there was no need for him to say that. He didn't have to say that, and if it provides some hope for people, and people need hope before they'll act, well, start hoping and start acting.
Yeah, I think it really was, and David, not only covered it at Brad Block, certainly, but have mentioned that moment several times on air on a bunch of different shows, because, as you say, you know, it was sort of a private moment, really, and he had no reason to say that unless he simply wanted to out-and-out lie, which
right.
Seems strange enough. So
We're out of time. I just want to thank you both so much for being here today. Go to our website at wakingupinamerica.com, and you can see these two guys' smiling faces. In case you didn't catch the websites, they're there for you. You can follow this out. These guys will be back again. We want to thank Eileen Proctor, too. for just making these conversations available, because she'll say, no, you want to put this one with that one and things of that nature. And she's just really dedicated herself to making a difference in this country. So, Eileen Proctor, just thank you so much. You're an incredible human being. We also want to say just thank you to the people at Voice America. Without you, these global conversations would not be possible. And for those of you around the world, the kind of activity that's happening here in the U.S. Will be happening in your countries as well, if it is not already, because it is time for this planet to grow up, and we're doing that as fast as we can. This program has been brought to you by the Golden Hearts Foundation in association with Kirkgaard Media, our radio partners, PonyCompany.com, Mona V, Max GXL, Dr. James Murphy in Memoriam. Thank you to the team at Voice America and to Bent Miegen for our theme music that you're listening to right now. That's Almost Ordinary People. Next week, invite a friend to listen and write us at val@wakingupinamerica.com and join us again next week. Thank you so much. Sidious Altius Fortius.
This is for you. This is for all in you.
Thank you for joining us today for Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. Waking Up in America can be heard live every Wednesday, 12 p.m. Pacific Time on VoiceAmerica.com, and Valerie welcomes all emails at HeavenIncorporated.com.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaVariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.